Yeah. So I try and keep that verse in mind when it comes to Bible studies, that, you know, a Bible study, a good one, just really requires work on our part. And so, you know, before you start the study, I've got the outline basically of what I'm going to say here, but, you know, it needs to start with prayer. And I would really encourage the students, we ask our students to come back to school several days early, and they basically know the area that they're going to be leading the studies in. But I know when we were at Wisconsin, before the semester would start or before this year would start in the fall, I'd just go over to campus and walk around each of the dorms and just pray for the kids that were going to be living in that dorm. That, I mean, there were going to be hundreds of them, and I didn't know who was going to live there and who would be interested, and so I just began to go over there and pray and ask God to start directing people my way through however God would want to do it. And, you know, evangelism begins with Him, and so just asking Him to be working in the hearts of these students. And then as I met kids, you know, put their names on a piece of paper, keep it in my Bible, pray for it. You may want to make, like, if you're going to work on a particular floor or a particular dorm unit or an apartment complex or however you're going to do it, maybe make a little map, like, of every room on that floor. And then as you meet people, write their names in and use that as your prayer list. And really just lift the whole thing up to the Lord in prayer. The next thing is preparation. And it really helps if you've got some idea of what you're going to cover. And get a battle plan, in other words. And, you know, you can use any kind of study, but it's helpful for you to go over it in advance. And if it's a series of studies, I'd recommend going through the whole series, so you can kind of see the whole flow of where, what the studies are covering, what direction it's going to go. And the key, I think, to a decent Bible study is to have questions ready. A lot of times, I've been in too many Bible studies where it was like this: Bill, what does verse 35 say? You know, well, I mean, you know, basically you're just there for a reading lesson, you know, and everybody, if you're at a university level, you think everybody could do that when they got there. So, or if it's a fill in the blank, don't ask, well, Susie, what'd you get for number 4? You know, because, I mean, that just kills discussion. And the key to having a good Bible study is having questions, I think, at least, is having questions prepared beforehand that stimulate discussion, not just squelch it. Or, you know, asking questions that are so obvious that nobody cares to answer, you know, because you don't want to look like a geek for answering the question. So, if you're, I know, like, for the Real Purpose of Life Bible studies, I know Brett and Kevin Richardson one time sat down and wrote out questions for every one of those studies, for all 6 books. And if you're going to use those studies, I mean, I'd call Brett up and get the list and say, hey, send me a list of those questions. So another thing I would do is, if you're going to be leading a study, especially like if it's a question-answer type of thing, have the same kind of book that everybody in the study's got. Don't have one that on the outside says Leader's Guide printed all over it, because I think that that's intimidating to the students. So what I do is, like, in the margin of the, if I'm going to use a booklet format, I take and write all my questions in the margin, and I'm sitting there with the same stuff they have, and so they're not intimidated by that. They just don't know that I've already got the questions already written out there. So I think that that really helps reinforce your leadership in the study if you've got questions that stimulate discussion, and it makes them feel comfortable, and it reinforces your leadership in the study also. Anybody got anything they want to throw in there that maybe has been helpful to Carl?
I have a question.
Okay.
Because I co-led a Bible study this year with an older student, and he was basically the one who led it. We spent 2 hours together every week, regularly, mulling over this thing, praying, and coming up with questions we thought were good questions, and they were. But we just had a problem with the guys in the study. Somebody would ask a question, and there would be silence. You could hear the crickets chirping. And it kind of got me to the place where I was at the end of my rope and didn't know what to do. I was trying to train this guy to lead a Bible study, and he was a good leader. He did a good job. Our questions were good. We were doing all the right stuff. But still, it seemed like more of a relational problem maybe between the guys. Not that they didn't like each other, but they were your basic Nebraska farm boys. Maybe they were kind of reluctant to talk. What do you do in a situation like that? You ever encountered that?
More times than I care to think about. let me ask you this. Did you do anything with those guys during the rest of the week other than the Bible study?
Well, we did. We did lots of things with them. We tried to make the deal, the Bible study, highly relational, not only during the study time, but we had lots of activities. And so we really did major on that whole issue of building relationships with them. And we had good relationships with most of them. They liked us and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I got a thought.
Okay.
If you can put a plant in there.
Like a philodendron?
No, not that kind of plant. Somebody that could just be in the group and he has no leadership. And he could set the pace or break the ice.
Considered that. You know, because as long as the leader answers his own question, well, you know, why answer? You're going to answer, tell us what he answers. I mean, if he has somebody who, I mean, it would have to be a big secret. No, I mean, it's an open Bible study, right? Yeah. Did you start out with like serendipity questions to break the ice? Yeah, we did. We'd always start out with a question or an activity of some kind. I mean, we did all the right stuff.
You could just give up.
I could have done that, but we didn't. These guys were all freshmen, you know, about half of them were Christians, about half not. And it seems like we consistently ran into that problem. I wondered if maybe it was just the area of the country that we work in, because Midwestern farm boys are usually less communicative than students who were, say, at Berkeley, where we were before. It was a different story.
Yeah.
Send you some
masters,
they won't shut up.
Why? Let me. This is just kind of an off-the-wall question, but I mean, is that an area that you guys took to prayer when you and the leader got together?
Probably not sufficiently. I mean, we probably prayed over it, but I don't think we made it a concerted area of prayer.
That's just a thought. I mean.
Good thought.
Seems like it works to you have to kind of develop the ability to do that thing in the right way, but I think it works to address a question to a particular person, making sure that that question is not entirely intimidating. But rarely will I ask an open question until I got the discussion going. You know, I'll ask, you know, so-and-so, what do you outcome of this situation or whatever, and try to get a personal response, and then I dialogue with that person for a little while, making sure that it's the type of question they there's no right or wrong answer. It's a personal response type thing, and it seems like if you'll address the question to a particular person, eventually that'll open up the rest of the group. You have to be careful not to do that with some people, though. You know, knowing the group, you would know who you couldn't do that with. You'd be scared of them.
help.
Okay, the next thing here is just on recruiting. Surprising as it may seem, people won't come unless they're asked. So that ought to be the first plan. And I would always try and ask with a plan in mind. Don't go to someone and say, we're going to try and get a Bible study together. Would you be interested if we did? I would say, we're going to have one on Thursday nights at 7 o'clock. And, you know, it's going to be in this room. I know when we were in Wisconsin, the first thing I'd... when we put up some signs, you know, if you're interested in a dorm study, please call this number. Well, I just gave him my home number. The first guy that called me, I said, okay, what's your room number? I went over to meet him. The first thing I did was try to ask him if we could have it in his room. That way, from then on, anybody that called is, oh, we're going to meet in celery dorm 803, you know, and to ask with a specific plan in mind. If you're doing an evangelistic study, I wouldn't ask people to come to an evangelistic study. I would ask them to come to an investigative study. I just think that students are... if you tell them... you know, if they know they're not a Christian and you ask them to an evangelistic study, it's kind of like, hey, we've got an agenda here and you're part of it, buddy. You're the target. So I just stress it's an investigative study at that time. And I would basically ask for short-term commitments. And I know when Larry and I were in school 20 years ago, you could ask somebody to get in a Bible study that would meet for the whole semester. And they wouldn't think anything about saying yes to it. They'd just do it. But maybe it's different on your campus, but I think those days are gone here. And I think students are much more responsive to getting in a 3 or 4 week study. And then, if that study meets their need, then you can get them into another one, and you can end up meeting all semester, but I think they'd be pretty reluctant to, especially if they don't know you very well, to say, oh yeah, I'll commit every Wednesday night of the semester to you. So... yeah. So, you know, I would, in terms of people, getting them to come, I'd throw the net as wide as I could. I've never tried to be real selective. Being swamped with people to come usually hasn't been the problem I've worked with, so I try and throw a wide net in terms of recruiting people. And, you know, I mean, I've had guys ask if their girlfriends could come and she'd be the only girl there, but I thought, well, God loves her too, and she needs to know about it, and I'm probably not going to start a study in the girls' dorm, so she ought to get over here then. So, I would really stress, though, with the students, you know, ask God to bring people into your leaders, into your path. I'll never forget one time we were in Wisconsin. I asked some guys, I said, well, why don't you just go around and tell me why you're here tonight? Well, there were two guys I had never laid eyes on before. I knew everybody. I was working this one floor. The dorm's pretty good. There were these two guys who I'd never laid eyes on them. They had come down. I was like on the 9th floor. They'd come from the 6th floor, and they were sophomores, and they said, well, we wanted to go to a Bible study all last year, but nobody ever asked us. And we heard there were dorm Bible studies all last year, but we never knew of any. We just heard about them secondhand from other people. So when we heard that this one was meeting, we thought we'd come up here just to go to one and see what it was like. And, you know, my heart just ached at that. I thought, man, you know, those guys would have come a year earlier if somebody would have asked them. And so ask your, you know, stress to your students, you know, the to ask. And not be afraid. And, you know, what Louis Giglio was saying the other day, you know, students today do have a spiritual interest. And that's why the New Age thing is so powerful, is because there is that spiritual pull in people. I was at Trinity the other day with some Chinese students, and one of them was giving their testimony. And this guy was raised in mainland China, all his life, I mean from day one, he was told there is no God, there is no God, there is no God. But he came to a crisis point in his life and he said, I just started to pray. And I thought, you know, that's the spiritual pull in people that, I mean, they can be told by every authority in the country. But when crunch time comes, that need for God cries out. And if we're letting people know, you know, I mean, they may not be interested right now, you know, but if there's some freshman that thinks he's going to come here and tear the place up and, you know, mid-semester, he's flagging three courses, you know, he may be a lot more receptive to getting God into a part of his life than he is at the first of the semester. So he may come back later and ask for some help. So just in terms of once the study gets underway, I'd really just use the first study or two to let the guys get to know each other. And like Carl was saying, being relational with people. The little deal I've used in the past is called spiritual graphs, where you just kind of have people plot out. I mean, it's very non-threatening. A non-Christian can do this. But just kind of trace out, you know, high or low moments in their life where they either felt close to God or far away from God. And, you know, then I just ask them to take maybe 2 minutes and describe the graph to the rest of the people. And so that way I at least get a thumbnail sketch of where this person thinks they are spiritually. I remember in Nebraska once, one of the football players came to one of the studies, and he was basically there because his brother was in Vietnam and he was afraid his brother would get killed. And so he was coming not for his sake as much as he was coming for his brother's sake. It was almost kind of like a, you know, maybe God will protect my brother if I get serious about God type of thing. Well, now that's a dumb reason to come to a Bible study, but it's real helpful for the Bible study leader to know that that's the guy's mentality when he comes. And so I don't think you're wasting any time at all to spend the first time or two that you get together in a group just to find out things about them so you can just read them. And I mean, I really work at trying to keep a data bank in my mind on comments that people make. And, you know, I'll just, okay. And I'll just tuck that one back under his file, you know, and I'll, you know, and I just pray, you know, God, if you want to use that information later, you know, boy, bring that back up at a time when I can use it and that sort of thing. So, ask people why they're coming or what they expect from the study. I know the first Bible study I was ever in, you know, six of the guys were there to play Stump the Bible Scholar. And they just wanted to ask this guy every off-the-wall question that they'd ever heard, you know. But it didn't bother him because he knew most of the answers and just kind of snapped them right off. Other people, you know, like these two guys in Wisconsin, you know, they weren't overly spiritual, but it really intrigued them that they heard that other college students were studying the Bible, and that had never crossed their mind before they'd come to college. And so a couple of things about assumptions. Don't assume that they know the Bible. Don't assume that they believe the Bible. On knowing, I mean, I've heard people say, well, I'm sure that you all know John 3:16. Now, you know, probably every one of us in this room do, but hey, you know, we're all paid professionals. You know, we're supposed to know that verse. But, you know, some guy that's just wandered in from the sticks, I mean, he doesn't know come here from Sikkim. And don't assume that they know it, and then don't assume that they believe it. Now, sometimes this is, I would highly encourage this next thing here. If possible, give everybody the same copy of the Bible. I know a couple of years ago we got these Serendipity study Bibles, and I led a Bible study with some baseball players over in the athletic dorm. And it was real handy to give them, none of them felt threatened. I mean, nobody brought their own personal hernia edition of the Bible that they kept in the room but never read, you know, and they all had these Bibles. We kept them in the room that we had the Bible study in all semester, and it was super handy because I could just say, well, instead of telling these guys, well, hey, let's look up Titus 3:5, and everybody there is going, Titus, where in the world is that? You know, I could just say, let's all turn over to page 93. And nobody felt intimidated because, I mean, nobody likes to have to look at the table of contents to find out where Titus is to look it up. And so what I'm trying to stress here is you need to do everything you can to make them feel comfortable in the Bible study, where they will want to come back. And if people feel uneasy or tense, you know, they're just not going to come back. I've seen this like in Sunday school a lot of times, and I know the intention is good, is to get everybody to participate, so the Sunday school teacher sometimes will just, you know, he'll just start around this end of the room and say, as he wants different verses read, you know, okay, Mary, you read this one, you read this one, you read this one. Well, if you notice that somebody's a really bad reader, I wouldn't call on them again, because I know that some people, I mean, they're embarrassed about their reading skills, and even college students are like that. They can't read that well out loud, and they're just embarrassed to do it. So if you notice that a guy's having problems like that, that's one of those things you need to mark down in your data bank and remember, you know, either give him, you know, if you want him to read one, stop by his room earlier in the day or something, tell him you're going to give him that verse to read so he can look at it a couple of times or something. But if you don't have the same copy, then give them a hint where it is. Like if you're going to tell them to look up Titus, just tell them, okay, in the New Testament, you may notice that all the T's are together. 1st and 2nd Thessalonians, 1st and 2nd Timothy, and Titus. Isn't that handy how God put all those together? Well, Titus is the last one back there, so if you find a book that starts with T's, you know you're almost there. Well, then nobody feels intimidated by looking. If you tell them to look for James, well, James is kind of a little book, so, well, if you find Hebrews, it's the one right after that. You know, I mean, make it as easy for them to find what you're looking for as possible. The basic purposes of the study, you want to expose people to truth that are in the Scriptures. You want to expose them to Jesus. And you want to give them a clear understanding of the gospel, and you want to give them an opportunity to trust Christ. And usually, in the study, I try and watch guys' reactions. And then this fourth one about giving them the opportunity to trust, that's when I'm asking guys to go out for a Coke, or I try and go by their room when I know no one else is going to be there. I know there's this little Southpaw pitcher for OU a couple years ago, and he was in the study I was leading, and we read this verse in John, and he said, and there were 13 guys in the room, and this encouraged me because he was so uninhibited to ask it, but he said, does this verse mean that a person really can't experience life until he knows Jesus Christ? I just wanted to scream hallelujah. I said, "That Joy, that is exactly what that verse means." And he says, huh. And that's all he said then. But I can tell you, later that week, I was in his room going over the bridge illustration to see if he'd ever done that. I didn't think he had. He didn't think he had. So I was giving him a chance to respond to that. So on some preparation, if the study has preparation, like if it's a fill in the blank or a passage analysis type of study or something like that, I'd really try and encourage the guys to try and work on it before they get there. On serendipity studies and stuff, the ones I led with the baseball team, asking those guys, I was aware of what their schedule was like. Asking them to try and spend, you know, you may think, well, gosh, it doesn't take much commitment to spend 45 minutes working on that Bible study during the week. Surely they've got 45 minutes. Well, for these guys, coming to a study for an hour was a super big commitment. And asking them to do something 45 minutes in addition to that would have been totally unrealistic. So I used a study that called for no preparation before they walked in. I mean, they could come in and they didn't have to have thought about God since the last time they were in that room. And they could come in and feel right at home with everyone else. So if you get somebody that's hungry, though, those are the guys that I'd go around to, and I'd maybe give them a fill-in-the-blank study that we could work on one-on-one after that or something like that. I try to explain some ground rules at the start of a Bible study. If you got a question, you got to ask it. And I don't care how dumb it sounds to you or, I just really try and encourage them to ask. And I really try and praise questions. I mean, if you want people to keep asking questions, when they finally get up enough nerve to ask one, you've got to praise them and let them know that you think that's a good question. You can't snicker at it or anything like that. So, yeah. Yeah. The Bible is going to be the thing we look at. Now, I don't ask them to agree with it. At this point, all I'm trying to do is expose them to it. But what I don't want to do is get into an argument about, my grandmother says, or something like, if that's what your grandmother says, bless her heart, that's great. But tonight, we're just asking, what does this say? You study the passage under consideration, and that's probably, you've got to be sensitive to the Spirit of God here at times, because if he's really got a question about another passage, that you think could really answer the question, you've got to be willing to go to it. But like Max said one time, if you're going to chase rabbits, make sure they've got some meat on them. And most of the time when people chase rabbits, they're real skinny. I mean, you chase it around the room for 30 minutes and you finally get it, and then you wonder what you wasted all your time for. Agree to disagree agreeably. You need to know the objective of your study. If you've got these people for 1 hour, what is the one thing? I mean, if they don't catch anything else, what is the one thing you want them to leave with that they didn't know or they hadn't been exposed to before? You need to be able to put that at least in one sentence. And that'll keep you focused. I think you do a better job when you know what your objective is. Not only do they get more out of it, but I think you do it as well. So in leading the study, your role, ask strategic questions. See yourself as a discussion leader and not as a Bible teacher. And here again, that's one of those things, and all of us do. I mean, you probably know the Bible better than everybody that's going to be in your study. Well, that's not what we're here for, though. We're not here to win trivia contests. We're here to try and get them to discuss things and give them an opportunity to do it. So try and keep it Bible-centered, try and keep it topic-centered, and try and keep it group-centered. I mean, if you want these people to keep coming back, it's got to relate to them. And so generally I'd begin with a wide-open question. And that's the kind, like here, what are some of the major things that you see in this passage? Well, that's pretty wide open. I mean, it's real hard to answer that question wrong. I mean, regardless of how obscure someone's question or their answer may be, you can always truthfully say, yeah, that's in there. What do some of you others see? I mean, you don't have to dwell on it if it's not one of the major things, but I mean, you can at least acknowledge it and then move on. Who'd like to share what they got out of this passage? Or, you know, what impresses you the most about this? There's basic kinds of questions that you can use. One of them, the first type is a discovery. The way you could ask a discovery question is like, how would you express this thought in your own words? If you were going to rephrase this verse, how would you say it in your own words? Well, it's pretty hard for someone to mess that one up.
So these examples are not examples of insulting questions. They're examples of questions.
Yeah. Understanding questions, the goal of those is to help people understand the meaning and the implications. And there are some different examples there. A definition. You know, what does this word mean? Relationship and purpose. Now, why would he say that? You know, that is fun to do with passages where Jesus is talking. Because sometimes Jesus' responses to things aren't usually what you and I would say a lot of times. So, you know, well, why do you think he'd say that? You know, and you can really see where, if they're catching it or not. Well, why would that be true? Or why would that be important? The significance and importance. The consequence and implication. Well, now, what would the results of that be? If that was just to continue to happen, what would the results be? Relevance and position. Where does this fit in? You know, the God-man relationship. Well, what does this, you know, what does this say about the relationship between God and man? Then the last kind there is application questions, where you're trying to help each person make a personal application. And here, you basically have to, I think before you can ask people to make application questions that they're willing to throw out into the group, like from what Carl said here just a minute ago, this group that never talked is not going to volunteer any application questions. I mean, if they're not asking any, they're probably going to be pretty reluctant to admit in front of the entire group how this group, how that passage relates to them. So, but the study I led with the baseball players a couple of years ago, those guys were with each other all day long. And the barriers got broken down real early in the year. And so, to them, it was very unthreatening to say things. And I heard questions in that Bible study that I've never heard in any other group of students that I led. But they were a pretty unique group. And so, I could do things with them and get away with it that I would have never even have tried in other groups. So, that's where you've got to, before you can do this one, I think it really helps to know your audience there. You need to learn how to direct your questions at different people. You can ask a general question to the whole group, and I'm sure everybody's had a Bible study where there's one guy in the study that's willing to answer every question you ask. And and I'll just say this real quick. If you've got someone like that, that's the kind of person, you know, you don't want to pray that they're sick and don't come or anything, but you get them off to the side and say, you know, Bobby over there, have you noticed that Bobby is, you know, he just doesn't answer very many of the questions in the Bible study. This week, could you please help me try and draw him out a little bit? And I mean, try and get that person on your side and get him working with you. And I have had that happen before where that works. A relay question, for instance. David asked me a question, and as the discussion leader, you need to be careful that you're not just this absorption board that captures all the sound waves. You know, a question comes at you and it never escapes. You need to learn how to bounce questions. If David asked me a question, I need to be able to say, well, Carl, what do you think about that? And be free to give Carl whatever, you know, I can't give my answer first and then ask, Carl, do you have anything you'd like to add to that? You know, they're not going to do it. So you just ask Carl right off the bat, well, Carl, what do you think about that? Keith, what do you think? And when a Bible study really gets fun is when they start asking each other questions, and they just start almost leaving you out of it. I mean, ultimately, that you want that to be your goal, because that's when discovery is really going on. Because they're not just listening to you, they're listening to what this other person's saying. They're listening to the implications of what they're saying. So, or if Keith asks me a question, don't be afraid to say, well, what do you think? You know, just turn it right back on him. And if he says he doesn't know or something like that, then ask someone else. But keep, as much as possible, you need to try and keep all the questions from coming just to you. Because then you end up just being a lecturer. Practical suggestions here. Don't let one or two people dominate. But that's what I'm saying. That's where you need to get the people off during the week. Don't talk to them about it right then. Hey, will you shut up? No. You know, try not to chase rabbits. That's what I was talking about earlier, about, you know, keep it topic-centered. This next one I would try to do, that is, I would never flatly contradict a person. You know, don't say things like, where on earth did you hear that? You know, but that's where you need to start asking other people to chime in, you know, well, what does somebody else think? Or, you know, does somebody else know a verse that might shed some light on that? Or are you sure that's the intended meaning of what the passage is saying? Anybody got any suggestions on that one?
I have a question on it. Let me give you a situation. In our athletes' Bible study, one of the most respected guys on the team, football team, was a Mormon. Everyone else that was coming to our Bible study was either not a Christian or so young in their faith that they never would ever guess that Kelly was not anything but a great Christian guy.
Uh-huh.
And he came faithfully. I personally, first of all, I had to sit down and talk with him in his dorm room one day, and we really made it clear what our objectives were. I encouraged him to keep coming because it was an open Bible study. But one time, I mean, we got off. I mean, everything that I was teaching, he would contradict. And have you ever dealt with someone of a different faith? How do you I'm not sure I handled it well. I think it became a dialogue between us, and everyone else kind of observed, and it wasn't very productive.
Yeah. Anybody ever tackled that situation? I've had a lot of problems with Bible studies, but I've never had that one directly. You ever tackled anything like that, George?
Not directly like that. Is there a time when you should approach a person outside the group and say, you know, we both know that what we're saying contradicts each other, maybe it'd be a good idea that we meet separately?
Yeah, I think I don't think I'd have any problems doing that.
And imply that you're not invited anymore.
Well, I think I'd let him know, you know, you're welcome to keep coming to the study, but, you know, I'm really having trouble. I feel like you're... And I just tell him at that point, I mean, if you're in a personal conversation, you know, I feel like you're opposing me at this. And, you know, if you're going to come, and I'd like to see you keep coming, you don't have to agree with everything I say. But, you know, I am trying to get some things across to these other guys who know almost nothing about the Scriptures. And I really feel like you're hindering that. And I just let him know that. So.
I was just going to say, I think there's a point where you're obligated before God to stand for what's true biblically. If they are, like, denying the virgin birth or something that's, you know, And I don't think you have to be ugly about it, but I think you need to say something like, well, there are obviously different views about that from what my understanding of Scripture is. And then just state the point and then move on. But I
tried that and he kept coming back. That's what was really awkward is it was on baptism. And it was really awkward.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was just going...
But at least the rest of those guys got the message that there were two opinions. The thing was, he never came back.
And so I feel like probably he got... It was toward the end of this spring. There was only a couple more studies to go, but I'm not sure I handled it real well.
Mm-hmm.
He had been coming all year. You know, had never done that before. So
I had a situation where my BSU was probably 60% non-Baptist, so you're always coming in contact with everybody else's beliefs. And I just handled it with a girl who says that she didn't keep coming back at me, though. She wasn't quite that aggressive. She was a little more timid about it. But during the Bible study, I just listened to her, and I stated, well, there are many beliefs in this one thing. And just kind of moved on with it. And then I went to talk to her later about it, and we had a good discussion later about, I really want to know, letting her know that I really want to talk to her. I didn't want to just, do that, but in front of a group, there just wasn't the proper time. But now that we're one-on-one, I'd like to sit down and talk about this particular issue. And I assume he has some problems with what I believe, and let's talk it out. And there was not necessarily she agreed with me and I agreed with her. There was more of an understanding of where she was coming from. She explained to me what her denomination had done and why. And then I said, well, now this is a Baptist community. And I just laid it out online. This is what we believe. And if you're going to hear this taught, we want you to come. But I want you to come to the understanding that we are Baptists. Yeah. So just the one-on-one, making sure that I approached her knowing that she was not going to pinch me. And I approached her and said, let's go get it. And tomorrow afternoon, I really want to talk.
She kept on coming?
Yeah, she kept coming. But she knew. She knew what we were about and why. And so that she would know that I'm not going back there.
It almost sounds like scenario. It almost sounds like he had given this book an agenda.
Oh, all along, yeah. And we talked about that 2.5 years ago when he transferred in. We sat in his room and went through the whole thing. I made it clear that I understood what his motive was. Well, what our agenda was, and that's what we were going to accomplish. And I think, because he graduated, he won't be back. And so I think maybe in some ways he was bringing his plan to a climax with 2 or 3 weeks to go in the semester, hoping that maybe he'd have a chance to get with some of these other guys outside of the group.
I don't know how it is in Mexico. I assume it's somewhere with my Mormon neighbor. As compared to the Mormons that I encountered in the Midwest, they're different. They're not necessarily different theology, but they're different approach. They're more syncretistic in the West than they are in the Midwest. The Midwest, they stand up, fight and argue, bite your nose off, call you lost and everything. At least that had been my experience. But Arizona, older Baptists, that's one.
Yeah, that's
and
good.
Want to talk, volunteer to go on our mission list so you can interpret for us and went to Mexico. That kind of a syncretistic approach. And what I'm saying is it almost sounds, and yet at the same time where that's true, his theology isn't different. He he uses opportunity, just like I do, to try to communicate his belief systems to me. And of course, you know, it just, the way you said it, just almost sounded like, you know, I was thinking, well, maybe he just felt like there's, maybe there just been some circumstances that took place in his life of close to that period that caused him to be more confronted than he had otherwise been.
Maybe.
But I did see the effects of contradicting. I mean, essentially, I did contradict him.
Yeah.
I really had to. But I saw the effects on our study. It wasn't good. And I know that in other cases where it's not a heretical type thing, I really have been forewarned by that.
Well, I'm going to turn it over to...
There were just a couple of things that I thought of just in thinking through the workshop in terms of preparing students themselves to become Bible study leaders. And I think that is the success of a Bible study. One of the things that you've got to really look at is the quality of the student that you're asking to do that. And one of the real keys to we try to really tell our students, I mean, for some reason they figured out that I'm not a student anymore. I'm not sure what it is that enables them to do that, but they've got it figured out somehow. And, you know, you guys are a lot better recruiters of students than I am. And you know, you want to get your students to the point to where they are the ones leading that your Bible studies and so on. But one of the things that you want to really watch for is you want to watch for the quality of their life, and you know, be careful. Sometimes you'll have students that are that really get an excitement about leading a Bible study. We had a freshman guy this year that I mean, if we had asked him to lead a Bible study, he would have jumped at the opportunity. He was inviting himself to share his testimony at our weekly BSU meeting. We call them rallies. And you know, he wanted to share his testimony at this meeting, and enjoyed being in front of people. I think he got a lot of his strokes that way. And but in terms of the quality of his life, I mean, yeah, he was not ready to do that. And so, I would encourage you just in helping prepare students to lead Bible studies on your campus to really pray through and think through what are some of the characteristics that you really believe God wants people, the students on your campus that lead Bible studies, what characteristics does God really want them to, you know, to be developing in their life, to have demonstrated in their life, and work with your students to really see that kind of character development. Not that they've arrived, because if that's the qualification, then we're all in trouble. But you want them to be headed in the right direction and have really shown some fruit as far as the character of their own life, their own personal walk with God, you know, that kind of thing. And so I encourage you to think through that and then work with, you know, have that kind of vision for what you want to see happen, then work with your students to see those things built. And have some standards. When we sit down with students that we ask to lead a Bible study on our campus, we go over with them. Here are the things that if we want you to be a part. We're changing our structure next year, but this past year we called our Bible study leaders the ministry team, and so we sit down with students at the end of last school year, the one before the one just ended, and sit down and said, now we want to really challenge you to pray about being a part of ministry team, and these are the standards that we're asking people to really commit themselves to if they want to be a part of the ministry team. And we went through those together, and where they understood from the beginning what kinds of things they were going to be committed to be a part of that group. And before we did that, we sat down and made a list of things that we wanted to see demonstrated in students' lives before we went to them and challenged them with the idea of being on a ministry team. And so in preparing students to lead Bible study, it begins just with the natural process of seeing them come to know Christ, taking the ones that do know Christ, and really beginning to help them grow. But you need to have an idea in mind of kind of a profile, if you will, of what you want the character of the Bible study leaders to be. So you know, work that through. And then as they prepare to lead a Bible study, really give them some training. You know, take the kinds of things like what Ted shared and go through that with them. And I would really encourage you to bring them in before school starts. I don't know how it is on your campus. On our campus, the dorms open almost a week before classes actually begin. And a lot of our, we have over 17,000 students living in residential halls. And so a lot of our ministry is, you know, is in the dormitories. And we will ask our students to come back 2 days before the dorms open. So they're coming back, you know, 9 or 10 days before classes actually start. But what we do is we meet with them and we get all of our catching up from the summer done. We get all of our training done and that kind of thing, and go over the schedule for the year so that they know, for the fall at least, so that they know what's happening, and get them really ready. And the first day that the resident halls opens, they're there at 8 o'clock to check in, and they're all set up and ready to go in their room by the time the majority of the students arrive, and they're free then to give their lives for that week. When they don't have to go to school and do homework and that sort of thing, and the others don't either, and everybody's trying to figure out who's who and meet new people, you know, and get their friends established and that kind of thing, they're free to really give their lives to do that. And so bring them back and really give them some training in how to do the ministry that you're asking them to do, and bring them back to where they can be the first people on hand to meet new students that are going to be in the area that they're going to be trying to ministering in. If it's not in residence halls, they can be around in whatever area it is they're going to be ministering in, whether it's the apartments that they're living in or the Greek house that they're living in, or they can go over to the classroom building where music students are going to be practicing already, or just wherever. And then I would encourage you to go with them to their Bible study every so often, and don't go as they inviting you to come and lead their Bible study for them, but you go and let them lead the Bible study just like they normally do, and then you sit down with them and really help them evaluate how they did, what happened, what did you think about this. That kind of thing, because that you can have them tell you what they're going to do when you meet with them one-on-one, maybe, or they can ask you questions about what's happening and all that sort of thing. But then you're dealing with them from their point of view, and they need someone to be able to deal with them from a point of view other than how they see it. And so try to get some time with them to just to not go in and speak to their Bible study for them. You can do that. That's okay to do that if they want you to and they think that would really help. But try to get some time on a fairly regular basis, 2 or 3 times a year, just to go and sit in their Bible study as one of the members and then help them evaluate afterwards. Those are some things that we found that have really been helpful to us as far as training students themselves to be Bible study leaders.
A lot of the stuff that I'm going to say is in your handouts, but there's some stuff I wanted to go over with you. I'm just going to tell you briefly what I've done in the past, what I'm doing right now, and what I plan to do in the future as far as the ministry team. I've been leading Bible study leaders these last couple of years with different teams. One of the first things I did was I started them through a book by Rick Warren. It's been retitled dynamic Bible study methods. It's the same stuff, though. And what I had them do was I had them go through the book of Timothy. I picked a shorter book with the ministry team I was working with. And we took chapters 9, 10, 11 first, and we surveyed Timothy, and we did a chapter analysis of each chapter, and then we did a book synthesis, and then we analyzed each verse after we did a book background method. And so I did that with them one semester. I went through this entire book. They turned around and had a method they could use to lead Bible studies with. So each of the guys, I was working with 16 students that semester, and all 16 of them were required to read this book to be on my ministry team. And they were supposed to read certain chapters in the book and then work through certain verses of 1 Timothy, and then they could use those verses to develop questions so that they could lead their Bible studies with. Now that, in my opinion, would be more of what's called a Christian growth study. I see Bible studies on two different planes. One is for Christian growth, where you have mainly Christians, and the other one would be more for evangelistic studies. So one semester, I used this book by Jim Peterson called Living Proof. This is an excellent book. If you've not read it, I would encourage you to read it. And so what I did was, to be on my ministry team, I assigned them chapters out of here. Since we're on a semester system, I broke this up into 8 different parts, so they had to read about 3 chapters a week. And they would come to my ministry team, and I would have those questions for them and ask them questions. The good thing about this book is, in Appendix A back here, it has 24 different lessons that they can go through with non-Christians. And it goes through the Gospel of John. So what I did was I had these retyped, and I retyped all these questions on 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper. And if you guys want, I'd be glad to transfer them on a floppy or something for you. And I handed those to the students, so they would have evangelistic tools so they could use with students they were working with. I'm real big into visual aids, handouts, and things that students can get a hold of that can be reproducible. And so I would go over questions and how they could ask questions. And this book goes over that, and it's an excellent book on evangelistic studies. This one is good on Christian growth studies. So whatever kind of study you wanted to lead or have your students lead would, depending on what kind of book. There's other good books out. These are just two that I chose to use. And then what I did the next semester is I borrowed a videotape, and I had them go through this. I had them, to be on my team that semester, I had them select different methods. They paired up on my ministry team, and one person took a devotional method, and they had to give me an outline, a written outline of what they were going to do a week in advance. They had to show me the outline, and then I would videotape them for 30 minutes in front of the whole team. We would turn right back around and watch it and evaluate it. And so we would evaluate what they did wrong, what were their strong points, you know, did they, you know, use too many cliches, or, you know, and it was they were scared to death. And so Larry said to go to their Bible studies. If you can go, that's better. But this is second best if you can videotape them and let them see what they look like and on videotape. And I think it was very helpful for my ministry team to see what they look like on tape, to say, man, I didn't know that I talked like that, you know, and I talked too low. Nobody can hear me, you know. I didn't. And one of them broke a pointer, and she got so nervous. So, you know, a lot of things come out in this. I thought it was very helpful because, but let me tell you what I did. See, I had already taken them through these two books first, so I really felt like that they were well-grounded to be able to do this. I just didn't start from ground zero and say, okay, I'm going to videotape you this week. I prepared them ahead of time, and I felt like that they'd had enough intellectual input to be able to put some practical feet to it. Some other things that I've done is, one semester my team was 16 members large, and so I would meet with three. I prayed and chose 3 leaders off of that 16 of those 16 people, and I met with those three people regularly, and those people would then meet with the others on my ministry team. And so we meet for about 2.5 hours every week during the school semester. Well, it really is about 10 weeks out of a 16-week semester. And for like a Friday night, we would meet for the first hour and a half, and we would meet, say, to discuss one of the books. And then I would break them down into their small groups, and they would have a small group accountability. Now, these are my ministry team members I'm talking about. And they would say, how's it going personally, you know, and how's your quiet time going? And I would check up with them in the large group of how their Bible studies were going as well. And so I tried to use the little bit larger group and then the smaller group, and then I would meet with them individually too. And so I think you need all three of those levels with your ministry team people that are leading Bible studies, is you need the individual, but you also need their peers to keep them accountable in small groups. I think that's good for them. What I plan to do in the future is I try to evaluate. I'm real big into evaluating. And I try to evaluate what didn't work last semester. What do I think is going to work next semester? And I try to stay abreast of the students' needs and keep my hand on their pulse. One year, I planned for 6 months what I was going to do one semester. And I got to the point of ready to implement it into the ministry team, and they weren't ready for that. That's not what they needed. So I chunked all of that and went back to the prayer closet, so to speak. So one of the things I think that would be most helpful, in my opinion, is just to get before God and ask Him what your students need, what your ministry team members need. Now, real quickly, I tried to make in a reproducible form this thing called Topics. This is a 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, and you can Xerox it. I think originally I saw this from Milt Hughes, so I want to give credit where credit's due. But I got this when I was a student, so it was years ago. Larry may know where it's from. He's probably the one that gave it to me. But it just goes over the type of study, the description, and the advantage of it. Book passage, deductive, inductive, and so forth and so on. It's all self-explanatory. The next page, called Types and Techniques, is by David Birch. I talked to Carolyn Teague about this yesterday, and he said that it's fine to reproduce this, so there's no copyright problems with you reproducing this on Types and Techniques. The first one was how to do the different kinds of studies. This is how to do group work, whether brainstorming, buzz groups, circular response, debate. And so these are some things you can do within the Bible study itself, and it shows you tells you how to use them and the advantages of them. And then the next page is called 30 Thought-Provoking Questions. Dave Edwards put this together, and originally, a guy named David Stevens off of our ministry put some of it together, and it's from Bloom's, but it's, if you've read Leighton Ford's book, or not Leighton Ford, Ford's book, what's his first name? Anyway, Ford's book on principles of teaching, you will see these levels of learning: the knowledge level, the comprehension level, the application level, analysis, synthesis, and evaluation. And Dave Edwards broke them up into 5 questions under each of those levels, depending on what kind of Bible study you want to target. If you just want to target something for knowledge, then these are questions you would use. If you want to target a Bible study with comprehension level of learning, then that's what you'd use, and so forth and so on. The last thing I wanted you to look at is just one example that I picked up from Church on Brady that's called Lay Evangelism Group Studies, which I would not call it that if you're going to lead it that. Call it something like Discovery Studies. And this is an excellent thing. You don't have to have a lot of preparation. You could look at any passage. I've given you 4 examples. And all you ask of the passage is, what did you like? And let them respond. What did you not like? What did you not understand? What did you learn about God? What should you do? And what phrase or sentence will you carry with you? Are there any questions over that?
I have a generic question.
Okay.
suppose you don't have any students, I mean, any students that you think are qualified to lead a Bible study.
Okay, that was the situation when I went to Wisconsin. I mean, I was the issue. And so what I did was I started some individual studies in different dorm units that I led, but what I did was I began to notice who was asking thought-provoking questions, who was interested, and then I would basically try and time my exit out of the room when that person left. And I'd say, hey, can we get a Coke? And I'd set up an appointment with them. And I got to really know them, and it took a whole year. But then at the end of that year, I said, okay, next year I'd like for you to assist me in leading a Bible study. So at the end of my first year, all I had was three interested people. The next year, what I did was I had each one of those kids in a different study that I led at different parts of the week. And I would meet with them before, like Carl did with his guy here. I'd tell him what we were, you know, it is a part of it. I asked him how he was doing, what his time with the Lord and stuff was like, but we'd always get around to covering what we were going to do in the study. I'd tell him what my thought process was, you know, what some of my goals were, and I just tried to be as open as I knew how. You know, I'd try and ask him, you know, well, like if someone asked you, for instance, you know, well, why do you believe that you can't lose your salvation when this verse says, you know, and I'd throw some wild verse at him just to see what he'd say. And I'd say, okay, now, I don't believe that, but someone may ask you that question and may point to that verse one of these days. You've got to have an answer ready. So then the third year of my ministry there, I went ahead and led another study, but then each of them led one. But I told them, I said, okay, if you do this, though, within the first quarter of the year, you have to find someone in that study that you're going to make your assistant. And by the time we were there 5 years, we had 15 studies going on. I was leading one of them. So, you know, but that's how it started. You know, and I had to accept the fact that there wasn't anybody ready at that point, and it was just going to take some time. So that's one advantage to try and get around some freshmen. You know, I mean, you can't do this if you've got a senior on your hand. You know, so go after some young pups that are going to be around for a while that are going to be able to co-labor with you and give you a base to build on. So
I have a question for you, George. What kind of group did you use this study with?
That's an evangelistic group. Use that with mainly with non-Christians. However, you can use it with Christians.